Hello everyone, it's Friday the 16th of June and welcome to episode 159 of the Kite Podcast with me, Ben Eagle. In 2000, we're going back a bit now, IFCN set out as the International Farm Comparison Network to unite research partners through in-depth analysis of typical dairy farming systems around the world. And Kite's very own John Allen was a member from the start and has seen it develop through the years. Following last week's IFCN Researcher Conference in Riga in Latvia, we thought it would be a good opportunity to talk to IFCN founder Torsten Hemmer, who joins us today. We're also joined by Kite director John Allen, our podcast producer and senior consultant at Kite, Becky Leach. And as always, we're joined by everybody's favourite dairy market analyst, Chris Wilkland. Chris, over to you for the Milk Market Report. Where are you this week?
Well, I'm out on farm with my galoshes and umbrella this morning because no one is more in tune with what's happening in the milk fields than me. And I know just how wet it is everywhere. Oh, sorry, that's March's report. Bringing you up to date, the latest Environment Agency missive states that May rainfall for England was just 39 millimetres, which is 65% of the long-term average. In other words, snowfall. Needless to say, soil moisture deficits are well below average. And since then, there has been some helpful rain for some, but not a lot of rain for all. Certainly not enough to do what's required. And it's the same, I think, across Europe. As we've heard, John has just been to the IFCN conference in Europe. Just to hold a microphone at question time, you understand, not to do anything important. And Torsten also apparently lives in Europe somewhere. I don't know where. So perhaps we can squeeze in a question about what weather they've seen and what the lie of the land is where they've been and travelled to and from. And all of this means, Becky, it's time for a Kite podcast about the drought. Put it in the diary, and it really will be galosh time. But is this drought having any effect on buyer sentiment? Well, no. In short, I think they're aware of it, but not concerned. Demand is still by far the main driver, and that is described as being pretty rubbish. So on the EU listings this week, butter prices have been flat on butter with no changes, but spot traders say prices have dipped rather than increased. And that's definitely the case for powders. Dutch fell this week to just below 2,500 euros, but traders tell me finding buyers even at 2,400 euros is hard work, because demand has just evaporated. Butter is at 4,600 to 4,700, which now converts to less than 4,000 sterling because currency continues to rise against the euro and nibble away at value. In the middle of May, the current butter price would have been worth £50 more. And in the middle of April, £150 more. Cream is also flat. Last week it put on a spurt to £1.70 to £1.75, but I don't think it's moved any more this week. It hasn't lost value either, so that's something. Cream is tighter because of lower milk volumes and lower constituents in the milk as well. It's been a bit of a mixed week on the futures. Butter up 20 euros in Europe, skim powder down 20 euros. Not much change in New Zealand. And again, currency has taken a bite out of milk price returns based on those futures. The average is 32p for the next 6 months, but most of you will get a 3 to 4p premium on that, I think. Liquid processors, possibly more. Cheese market is also flat and dull, with spot trades doing nothing. Demand completely stopped. Spot trading normally dries up over July and August, when the whole of Europe goes on holiday, apart from farmers. But now there's a prospect of no trade for June, July and August. However, that doesn't mean the cheese market is uneventful. Apparently, the Aldi tender, the major Aldi tender, has been settled with processors getting the good news or the bad news this week. I think Saputo have grabbed a fair tonnage, but I don't know who else has or who has lost out. For sure, there will be some musical chairs going on about who supplies who with what over the next few months. But as far as prices are concerned, there's no change on either mild or mozzarella, still at 3,600 sterling and 3,100. Spot milk is where it was in the mid to high 30p range, not yet over 40p. On milk volumes, I'd love to say the weather means they're dropping off markedly after the flush. I'd like to say that, but I can't. They're dropping for sure, but at the same rate as normal, and we need them to absolutely tank to turn this market. So there you have it. After a few weeks of small but encouraging gains. Gins would be nice. Encouraging gains, I mean. We're back to the flat calm of a market in the doldrums. Let's hope, therefore, for the market's sake, that the drought intensifies. Let's hope, from a practical farming point of view, it doesn't. Goodbye.
Thought you were getting my order in at the bar then for tonight.
I know. Clearly the weekend has started early for Chris.
Well, I know that John and Torsten will have had far too many gins over the last few days, so I thought quip in there.
I know you're having a dig. Well, Torsten already got his excuses in, so I'll say no more. It would be great to hear from Torsten about his view on the weather before we move on.
Yeah, sure.
Yes, can I just put this in as well, this little quote from the IFCN report about prospects in Europe. I think your last report, Torsten, said that the prospects for Europe do not look good at all, or words to that effect.
Good morning, everyone. In some cases, we have created the perfect storm, and weather comes on top.
That's very cryptic, if I might say so, Torsten.
Yeah, we were waiting for more there.
I think our listener now is intrigued, because what we'll say before Torsten speaks is that actually when we were in the Baltic in Riga, and I was in Tallinn as well, then it is seriously dry out there. And I know they don't produce a lot of milk in the Baltics, say, but actually, yeah, I would be seriously worried if I was them. I think they've made half the first cut silage quantity, and they're just looking at maize struggling. Yeah.
Wow. The comment in your report says, the production growth in the EU is expected to slow down dramatically. That's a quite important line, Torsten, there, I'd say.
Yes. It has different aspects. It has a tactical aspect and a strategic aspect. So, but let's go back to the picture of a perfect storm. And a perfect storm, we might realize in 2 or 3 years overall what has changed. And I like to come later on to some of these points. But in Europe, we with the quota system, the quote post quota flush, we had always the situation. Milk was always there. Milk is always there. That was the old mantra. And the new mantra is milk will not be always there. There will be regions where processors have secured supply, and there will be regions where processors don't have secured supply. Based on weather, based on rising interest rates, based on environmental challenges, et cetera, et cetera. So and there are tons of issues on the negative side, and I don't see too many on the pushing positive side at the moment.
Oh, that's a cheery way to start the podcast. But some strong words there. And actually, I mean, we are, as Torsten says, we're going to go into depth, I think, in a lot of that later, because what is linked in today is the bigger picture thinking. But can we start? Let's start just by giving some overview, I suppose, on IFCN. Let's put the focus on IFCN, and I suppose the early days as well, because we've seen some change over time. Dawson, can you take us back to those early days of the organisation and explain why you decided to establish it in the first place and give us your perspective on how it's changed over the years?
Well, very good. Thank you, Ben. Well, there's some dairy in my DNA, right? So I grew up on a dairy farm, which is in our family since 1589.
Wow.
And in around 1700, our king became the King of England. So we were moved to be part of the United Kingdom in a certain sense. Then we have been sometimes part of France. So there was a dairy component and an international component, right? So that's my DNA.
John will remember all that. He'll remember that.
I was just thinking this was like a John Allen history book.
Yes. So when I started my studies in the end 80s, I had been working on dairy farms in Germany, in Belgium, in UK, in New Zealand, in a little bit in Asia as well. And I understood the system, but I could not compare them. And within Germany those days, the benchmarking system, which the state one had, does not fit to the benchmarking system for dairy, which state two had. So it means Scotland had a benchmarking system and Wales had one, but it didn't work. So that was the reality of the 80s. And then I thought, well, I think here's something to do, right? Let's develop a global standard for dairy benchmarking systems. So that's what I did in my PhD. And when I finished that PhD in the year 1999, I started the IFCN as an ongoing process of collecting data, bringing people together. And, you know, I have something nice for you. This is the first IFCN dairy report from the year 2000.
Fantastic.
And the only thing that changed to 22, it's smaller, right?
Can I just come in there? Because we were there at the start, and I'll give you a little bit of background as to how me and Torsten met. I think it was through the European Dairy Farmers, wasn't it, group? And then Torsten set out his own vision, and he wanted to do his benchmarking in his way. And at the time, I know it antagonized some people. So he decided, and good on him, to do it on his own and start out a network. He invited me. I remember we went to Munich and we went to class because they were the hosts. And there's only 12 of us in that first room. And what Torsten was doing at the time was actually collecting data on farms around the world so that you could actually compare them and see who was more competitive, where the milk might come from in the future. Over the medium long term, and Torsten can explain the numbers, then that network of capturing data has grown to over 90 countries now around the world. So it covers, you know, the ICN covers a massive amount of the milk that's produced around the world. And so the basis of that is still there. It's based on Torsten's contact with researchers in all of those countries, people who know those countries, so that then you can accumulate the information. But beyond comparing farms, I think, and this was the interesting development, Torsten, that I'd like to hear from you say, is that in 2000, we got the evolution away from quotas. And actually, then the market starts to play its role. And IFCN has always had a great knowledge about supply side, about the farm side. But actually, at that stage, we moved into understanding the demands and the market and the market balance. And all of a sudden, IFCN became a very, very critical part of the dairy industry, especially for me and where our business was going, because it's a repository of supply side data, which is really, really important in the marketplace. And that's how we have actually worked with IFCN over those years. And gradually, it's become more and more relevant in the marketplace as a supply side tool for information. Is that a fair summation, Torsten, of how it evolved?
Yes, no, it's one wonderful summary. You know, we started with benchmarking farms. We added the whole supply side. We had added to the whole sector side. We are pretty good on demand side as well. And the knowledge pool was growing more in more elements to cover, more countries to cover and deepen the topics. That's what we did.
And John, could you perhaps just go into a little bit more of that sort of relationship between Titan and IFCN, how that's been over the years?
There's been a personal relationship between Torsten and myself. We're personal friends, and the sense that we trusted each other and respected each other's intelligence, and that always matters. And Torsten's got a lot of intelligence, far, far more than mine. And actually, what we've also done is the relationship with IFCN has created massive value for us in the sense that you have an understanding of the market. And that really has helped us in terms of our developing our supply chain relationships in the UK, because we have got information. We understand the marketplace at a worldwide level. And actually, that gives us competitive advantage in terms of when we're talking to our customers, whether they're farmers or their processors or their retailers.
IFCN held its research conference in Riga last week, and you were obviously both there. Take us through some of the key topics of discussion, Torsten, and some of the takeaways from your point of view.
Yes. Well, this conference, we were sitting together with around researchers from over 50 countries, and we had another crowd of, I think, 20, 30 countries, researchers joining us online. So the world was coming together in a certain sense. And if I sum up the main finding, maybe to repeat it, especially in the European or in the developed world, milk will not be there as it was in the past. Milk will be there for a processor if you have the right strategic approach and actions in your milk pool. And that's very important. And in the past, John, you have done farm economics. We have done farm economics. Mm-hmm. We have been engaging with processors. But in a certain sense, as milk was always there, this topic was not too strong. Now it becomes critical. So milk will not be always there. That's number one. Number two finding is in 2022, milk demand per capita will decline or has declined. Usually it was growing. People drink more dairy. In 2022, they drink less dairy. Why? And there was not enough milk to consume. World milk production grew by around 0.4% per year. Population grew by 0.9%, and per capita consumption fell back towards 0.5%. First time in my history to analyze dairy markets. Now, people, this story will come up sooner or later, and the people in this podcast are probably now the earliest to know that. And some people turn the story in saying now the veganism takes over, now dairy has reached its peak, and now people move out of dairy. The opposite is the case. The people like dairy, but the milk was not there, despite high milk prices and good farm economics. So this is something which is quite interesting. Then the third point is we had a special focus on energy. Dairy is related to energy. Dairy processing is related to energy. And the most critical remark is a dairy region which is doing exports relies on sustainable, competitive energy input. Without that, this region becomes under risk with its net export position. And a lot of European countries are in this category. So that was for me an eye-opener. And the fourth point, farm economic-wise, the calves on the table are set up new. Different milk prices, different feed prices, different energy prices, different inflations, different devaluations, et cetera, creates new winners and losers. And we were really surprised how much competitiveness Brazil, for example, lost. They were cost leaders, but they lost. Argentina lost competitiveness in this game. And interestingly, Europe gained a little.
Mm. I just come in there because it's interesting that in terms of some of the take-homes, I think we want to come back to the short-term milk outlook as well, because the market will rebalance. And I take all Chris's points earlier. One of the places, and we're talking here with Torsten, I think medium long-term, for sourcing milk. One of the papers that was presented was by Hugo from Argentina, who runs a consultant. He's out there with about eight consultants. And actually, they're producing milk in an environment with 100% inflation, right? And that struck me. I think farmers in this country would have no idea how to run a business with 100% inflation. And he was saying that, for instance, when the money, the pesos, come into their bank accounts, they try to get rid of it as quickly as possible to actually buy things, to do things, because they do not want to own and keep money in their bank account. I mean, we have no concept. And the problem is that Argentina would be a brilliant place to produce more dairy for the world. But actually, how can you do it in an environment like that? And I know you can say, well, they'll get over it and Argentina will go bust and then the opportunities come so you can go back in there. But the problem is, who's going to want to go into Argentina and invest when you've got such instability? I just, that paper really stood out for me, Torsten, and I reflected on it and thought, I'm not sure how I could run a business in an economy that worked like that. It just doesn't bear thinking about.
Yeah, and that's a really interesting example there, John. It is, if we're just thinking geographically around the world, Torsten, where for you are, I suppose, and we're thinking medium long term here, where are those areas and those markets that are going to thrive more going forward, and where are the places that are perhaps going to fall away more?
Well, you know, it's a complex question, and ISEND does every year its long-term outlook towards 2030 and 2050, right? So we are projecting every country and in supply demand and try to see how things are balancing out. So, and of course, milk supply has something to do with the milk price, right? So China is producing milk at non-competitively and should not produce that much milk. But as they get such a high milk price, they produce 70% of their own milk. So just to say that there could be a simple answer for you. We said at the moment, a lot of people say U.S. will it be, right? That's a simple answer. The U.S. will be the region which the biggest growth opportunity. But I like to educate or tell the audience, there are a lot of other factors coming in. So China disconnected their milk price from the world market and moved towards 70% self-sufficiency with that very high milk price. And probably other regions will do that as well. So how much will the milk price disconnect in Europe from the world market if Europe will become self-sufficient, for example? Ben, the answer is not, the easy answer is, U.S. has fantastic opportunities. Latin America has not the is losing competitiveness and has not this macroeconomic stability. Africa doesn't have it either. Eastern Europe is not in the position to activate milk supply. Europe won't do it. Oceania won't do it. So who's left is U.S., right? That's a simple term. But please consider that we might activate additional milk volumes by just having countries with much higher milk prices than the world market, the China example.
John, go straight over to you.
Yeah, well, when you listen to that, then, of course, the listener will be saying, well, that's great, Torsten, but actually listening to Chris, my current milk price is below cost of production. And actually, you're painting the picture that you're saying, yeah, it's a good place to be long term, and we endorse all of that. But I guess the listener is thinking, well, when does the market actually correct? And will it depend on this drought, or will it be more fundamental things in terms of supply side actually turning down and actually then the market rebalancing? Because I take your point about demand, and we were talking about it, weren't we, Chris, yesterday, that on the demand side, then actually we've not seen the full recovery in the demand side yet, but actually prices in the world are lower, and there is evidence that the demand is starting to pick up, and we're not really running in the world, from my understanding, with large significant stocks overhanging the market. So we still would stay, and I think that's relevant here to listen to you, because IFCN now does market forecasting on milk price, and that was actually looking at the recovery taking place later on this year and into next year. Would that be fair, Torsten?
Yes, and I think we, unless any major thing happened, I think we reached the lows. So we had a drop from €60 now to 35 euros on the world market prices. Still, all the prices of the European countries fall with a certain delay. So it means there might be still falling prices in UK or Europe or Germany because we still have not reached the world market prices. But the world market price will come back up in Q3, Q4. And, you know, with the current supply situation and farm economics is not great, stocks are low. Another good picture for a perfect storm to come.
What about other sort of medium-term trends, Thorsten? What are you projecting?
Well, with current inflation and current feed prices, energy prices, environmental constraints, the average milk price globally was in the past of around $40 per 100 kg milk. And this will not be the case in the future. So we have a structural shift, maybe from 40 to 45 or 45 between 45 and 50. And so the future milk price will not alternate back and forth around $40. It will alternate around maybe 45, maybe between 45 and 50. So we have a level shift of milk prices in front of us. That's good news for farmers.
Absolutely. And in terms of future research and knowledge transfer, what do you see as being the most important areas of research that will be taking place in dairy, again, over that medium to long term?
Dairy, like we know it now, will not be dairy like it will be for future proof in a lot of cases. So a lot of farming systems are farmers are not happy, next generation are not happy, consumers are not happy, animal welfare people are not happy, carbon emissions are not happy. So and there need to be a readjustment of all farming systems. There need to be a readjustment on organization and supply chains. What happened in UK already quite well. But a lot of change will be there. And the last area, I think consumers trust farmers, but consumers are not connected to farmers. So there's probably a tremendous task to reconnect farmers and consumers in a way and to create trust. So number one, farming system. Number two, better supply chains. Number three, better communication patterns between farmers and consumers.
Gosh, there's so much in there to bring apart. I just want to, with the listener in mind, I just want to bring out, I suppose, that word readjustment. And John, turn to you. If a listener's hearing Thorsten say that readjustment of farming systems, what does that mean in a UK context?
It's all the things that we've been talking about over the recent times in many ways. It linked to, I'll pick on the one, sustainability. And it's a big globally used word. It's not solely about carbon. It is more than carbon. But actually, that move in terms of how the world is going to be, you know, dairy farmers will have to be more cognizant of the fact that, yeah, we're not going to be producing food at the lowest possible price because at the expense of the environment, for instance, because there are so many constraints now in the system. And it's interesting, last week, there should be a piece in the FT about this shortly. Then actually, I was trying to explain to them that in reality, we are moving into an era of rising food prices in real terms. And I think that's going to be quite hard. That's quite a complex message to pass over. We've got to use innovation to try and control it. You can't just say to the customer, oh, you just pay more, you just keep on paying more because of the way the world is. But in actual fact, we've got to take the consumers with us because we do produce a fantastic product. But we've got to win them over to understand in producing it in future is going to be a higher cost. Would that be fair from your point of view when you look around, Thorsten, around the world?
Yes. And, you know, I made a statement as well. We have been decades of trends where the share of spendings from consumer on food was declining, right? And maybe might be in Germany between 9 or 10%. So, I think it's now time to bend this share now back up a little. And with that, we shall have the resources to make the changes in the food supply chain and on the farming systems. But it requires also knowledge. And that's, I think, where Kite is doing a great job and where IFCN is ready to help.
Yeah. Just one final reflection before we move on again. Again, linking back to what Dawson was saying earlier about, again, quoting that connection with the consumer. John, you were referring to that as well there. How do you think that connection will shift? So is this a communications issue, or is this actually a slightly different way that consumers are actually engaging with dairy and thinking about dairy? What does that shift and that shift in relationship look like?
Let's see the trend. At the moment, consumers are disconnecting more and more from food production. That's an ongoing trend. So first of all, you need to stop the trend, and then you need to bend the trend. So how to do that, I have no clue. But it just has to be done. It would be good for the consumers, good for the farmers to reconnect that link. Now, you know, people tried it with the open field days, with some issues campaign. I think it's not good enough. We need to get better.
I think what you just said, Austin, does show the challenge ahead. And one of the papers presented was from Bangladesh. And this really gets to the heart of, I think, some of what you want to talk about, Ben. Most of the milk's produced at household level, informally, in the village, and with two or three cows. We heard that the other week about India. Now, interestingly, in Bangladesh, the price of supplying milk to the dairy that then formally treats it, bottles it, and actually then puts it on a shop window, take it that roughly it's, call it 40 rupee, whatever, right? Actually, the people in the village, and then when it's put on the shelf, it retails for 50. But people in the village are far happier to pay the person directly for the informal milk. And remember, most milk in the world is still produced informally, which was one of the lessons you do learn when you're involved with IFCN. And they will pay 60. So actually, the farmer in the village has no incentive to enter the formal milk supply chain when local people will pay more than what he would get from the dairy company. And interestingly, Torsten, in that world, then those customers of that farmer trust him because they trust the product and they know where it comes from and they know that it's the person on the other side of the village. In this dairy industry, there's a countervailing force there that actually that's the ultimate linkage to your customer. We've had people who make cheese and dairy products, like last week we were talking about, and selling them direct to the customer. And that's a great way to do it. But the world we live in means that we've got supply chains now in the Western world, which are far more fractured than what I've just described. And do we really want to go back to a world where you're dealing with people with two or three cows and then actually selling it to their neighbors? I don't think necessarily the world's going to go. But do you identify with what I've just said there, Torsten, in terms of that's the ultimate connection one has? And those people in those communities value food far more highly than we value food in the West.
Mm-hmm. You know, I think these stories are fantastic, and that's what IFCN is about. It does not mean that we need to copy what happens there, but we need to understand the driving principles and benefits of supply chains we have not seen before. And that's, I fully agree on that one. It even goes one step further. In India, there's sometimes so much demand for this kind of milk from that farm where they have a waiting list of customers being served. And you can only be served as a customer if you are recommended by another customer. So imagine a dairy world operating like that, where we are always struggling to get a fair price related to cost of production. So there's something to learn even from these countries, which I find fascinating.
We're going to turn back to IFCN for a bit, because it has recently been acquired by AB Agri. So Torsten, with that in mind, are there going to be any sort of changes to the operational side to it?
Well, we in IFCN have decided it would be a good step for the network, for the employee, for myself, and also for our customers to join a bigger organization. And we found in AB Agri an organization which will be a very good fit because we can operate on a standalone basis. Number one, our mission, our values will remain. So just to remember, our values are trust, independent, and truth. They will remain. The way we operate will remain. We just have a stronger shareholder. And because that's very good for the steps to be taken, because at the moment I was the only shareholder, and with an organization of that size, and you know, great researcher network, great company network, great team in Kiel, great opportunities out there, the shareholder was becoming the limiting factor, right? So that's what we have solved now to make the next step in IFCN, and I'm very thankful for AB Agri for becoming part of their family. We are looking forward.
And your personal role is changing as well. So I think with that in mind as well, give us an idea of what that will be. But also, can you just reflect back and I suppose, what do you want your legacy to be?
Well, I have not thought about my legacy. You know, my life is the purpose of my life is not legacy, first of all. Maybe good for the people listening here. My role will change because I will, Lukas Wojcikowski, who has been 12 years with us, will take over my role as managing director of IFCN. And he's doing a great job. In a lot of cases, he's even better than myself. So I will take over the role of the chairman in the IFCN advisory board, guiding IFCN from that angle. And how does that fit with my system, with my role? You know, I always have been a kind of a researcher and teacher from the DNA. But by accident, I became an entrepreneur. I became a marketeer. I became a software modeler, et cetera, et cetera. And what I like to use now, the more time I have, to go back to my research and teaching DNA, supporting ICN and the dairy industry from that angle.
We're going to start to round it up because it's been a fascinating discussion today. But I mean, we've been talking, Torsten, about big change in medium to long term. We've been talking about readjustment. So with that in mind, what is your outlook overall for dairy? Do you see a positive outlook for dairy? And also, how does IFCN support that?
A glass of milk. An average consumer is drinking a glass of milk per day. That's the world average demand. And that is at the moment perceived as the most evil thing you can do regarding climate change, animal welfare, and other issues, right? So that's in the perception of a lot of people, not the farming community, but a lot of other people. Now, let's see that we make this glass of milk carbon neutral. If we make this glass of milk animal welfare friendly and continuously proven that cows are well. If you produce this milk with half of the cows globally than we do now, if we produce this milk in a way that farmers get a fair share of money and salaries, I think this product has a fantastic opportunity for the future. I think this is something what's possible if we work together.
I think sometimes it's important just to remember that glass of milk, isn't it? Because ultimately, that's what all of this is about.
Ben, maybe that's one point. Some people don't like milk. They said, okay, if you take don't like a glass of milk, you like a slice of cheese on your bread, right? It's the same thing, right?
Yes.
Or a slice of cheese on your burger. So, and whatever you like, it's the same.
All I can say is that we're really looking forward to working with our sister business now over in Kiel in Germany. Fantastic opportunities, as Torsten said, actually in dairy, when you look at it. We've got aligned values. We are committed to dairy. We're committed to dairy nutrition. That was why we were acquired. That's why we're going forward. And that's why AB's been making the investment it's been making. So it's a very positive outlook when you see that level of commitment for dairy in the future.
Can I just make a point about IFCN that I don't think I have that has been made, and that there are a lot of farmers who think that they're on the receiving end of a kicking from the vegans and the vegetarians and the climate activists, and that we as an industry haven't been very good at telling our story to the people that matter. You know, the organizations, the big global organizations, FAO and the climate organization.
Oh, yeah.
IFCN is one of those voices that speaks loud and clear about the industry and its importance and what it's doing. And farmers should remember that and know that IFCN is one of the organizations out there that's batting for them as individuals and telling the right people the right messages.
I agree more, Chris. It's fantastic. I'll let Torsten finish on this, because the level at which IFCN operates now within the FAO and others, and Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, for instance, means that Torsten's put it in a great place, and Torsten's going to carry on doing that, I know. And actually, that is a fantastic point, Chris.
Yeah, no, Chris, thanks a lot, because we are serving our researchers, company members, but by doing that, we basically serve the dairy industry at the same time. And a lot of people thought, how is that possible? You are a private business serving individuals and serving the greater good. And I'm very proud of that. And thanks, Chris, to make that out. If we run companies like that, we are in a perfect world. Serve customers and serve the greater good. That's good.
AB Agri is in a position to take that message further and louder, should it wish to do so, through the power that it has as Associated British Agriculture.
Thank you.
Brilliant. We'll leave it there. That is all we have time for today. Fantastic discussion today. A big thank you to our guests, Torsten Hemmer, John Allen, Chris Walkland, and our podcast producer, Becky Leach. Thank you very much for listening. Please see the show notes for more information, including our podcast disclaimer. We will be back with you next week, or Will be back with you next week. But for now, it's goodbye from all of us here.